it's not exactly like we're going in a different direction, but we're accomplishing more of what our vision was, which is to produce, you know, very high quality ciders.
Hey, 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 my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. Coming into this episode was Steve Garwood of Ragged Hill Cider. That is based in Massachusetts out in West Brookfield, and that's exactly who we're going to be hearing from in this here episode. It'll be Steve and his daughter Anne Garwood Hamp chit-chatting with me, the three of us, over a whole bunch of cider. This particular episode was recorded, I think it was in, it was like sometime this fall, which has been kind of like a major blur of absolute amazement because so much has happened since August to the first weekend of November. Absolutely like over the top, which is one of the reasons why it's kind of amazing to me that I'm even doing this week's episode because, but while I was flying back from California it was in early October, I was able to do some of the post-edit production on the plane, which means that's why we have this episode this week. I missed everybody last week because I was kind of recovering from the big weekend of the Calvados tasting, the cider dinner, the history of Applejack with Lisa Laird Dunn, and also Orchard Care with John Bunker, not to mention the tap takeover that took place too. Whew, a lot happened. I'm still as high as a kite from it all. And this week, we're going to roll out with a pre-episode from before the whole event took place so that we could kind of catch up a bit because it's just too good to miss. I mean, don't you want to spend your time listening to Cider Chat, listening to the three of us chit-chat about cider and enjoy a little bit of libations? I think so. It was fun editing, and I hope you enjoy it too. But first, before we get there, I do have a wee bit of news from out and about in Ciderville.
Walking through the orchards.
All over the Northern Hemisphere, since late August, folks have been picking apples and making cider. You know, they're picking them up, raking them, and picking them from the trees to grind them up, make fresh pressed apple juice, and ferment that cider. And that's why I was super stoked that at the cider dinner last weekend where we were celebrating women in cider, whew, what an event. That was just, thanks for everybody who came. That was so amazing. I can't even tell you how amazing that was to see everybody after two long years and have like just sold out events the whole time. But on the table, everybody got a little gift pack from Fermentis. Now, Fermentis is a sponsor of Cider Chat, and they've been really cool in so many ways. We had that episode with Anne Flesh. I think that's episode 336. I'll put a link in the show notes. She goes over all four of the SAF ciders that Fermentis offers. And Fermentis was kind enough to send these little gift packs of cider yeast for the guest at the cider dinner. I even had a couple extra. I had a local fermenter come by. I was able to set him up too because, you know, how do you know if this yeast is good if you don't try it? And I know that you could kind of be wary. You know, we get kind of set in our ways going to the same yeast, or we want to do a little bit of wild and a little bit of culture yeast, and yeast, it's a big commitment. You know, it's a big commitment because once you go, you're kind of set to that profile. So Fermentis really set us up. And mainly the two main yeasts that they sent was the SAF Cider AB1, which is a really nice, like, all-round cider yeast. It gives you just a well-balanced, and that's like kind of like the original SAF Cider yeast. And the other one was the SAF Cider TF6, which stands for Tutti Frutti, because that will really lend a nice sweet cider profile and just very high aromatics and the complexity, you know, the fruity notes that you really want. So they were hitting it on both ends of the curve for the folks who want a nice balanced cider to the more sweet ciders. And frankly, I kind of like them both, depending on what I'm eating at the time or what I'm doing. You know, I might switch off my cider across an evening to kind of like perk up the palate, have a little bit of sweetness there, kind of kickstart the mouth going, and then draw it down with a little bit of a drier cider later on. In my world, and probably yours, it's all good. So why not, you know, try a little bit of cider yeast from all the complete collection of Seth Cider. They have the AB1, the TF6, and the AC4 for sweet and dry ciders, and the AS2. I know this all sounds kind of super bizarre, and like, how do you do that? Like, you know, how do you figure it out? Like, which one is right for the cider you want? Just go to fermentis.com. They have a chart there. They have a whole dedication area now just for cider yeast, and it's called Saf Cider by Fermentis. Now, being a podcaster of a weekly show that's been going regularly every single week for the past 7 years takes a lot out of you. And that's why I haven't been so regular with the newsletter that I like to send out too. And I'd like to think that I could get it out weekly, but I don't always do that. And I call that newsletter E-Cider News. And you could subscribe to it by going to ciderchat.com. There's a little button on the sidebar. Just click that, put in your little info, and you will get an E-Cider News dropped into your mailbox. And why would you do that instead of listening to the podcast? Well, of course, I'm going to tell you, because I get to talk about things that I don't otherwise get to talk about on the podcast and go in a little bit more deeply. And one of the things I'm really intrigued about is really helping people understand a little bit of Web3 as I know it, and hoping that folks will take this opportunity to kind of catch up and know what's going on there. I know in the news right now, there's a lot about crypto and blockchain and how it's all falling apart. And yeah, that's true. There's like, you know, when you're building the bridge and you don't really know how to build it yet, there could be some little snafus. And for some people, that could be really tough. So how to approach that and have an understanding as a savvy business person, and also just someone who likes to participate in life. If that's you on either end of the spectrum, then E-Cider News might be a good thing to go to. Because in the coming weeks, I'm going to be talking about how those who attended Cider Days 2.0 and received a link to be able to mint their own POAP, which stands for Proof of Attendance Protocol, you got to know how to do that. So I'm going to be talking about that, if that sounds like really foreign land to you, and just giving you some tools if you want to dip your toes in here. I'm not coming on as a financial advisor or anything. I'm just sharing some of the knowledge I learned, and hopefully that will give you a better sense of some of the stuff that maybe you otherwise have no idea. And at heart, I'm rather a skeptic of things. I'm a very, very risk adverse. I like to always have like a safety net. So I've approached Web3 and that whole world of blockchain very carefully. But I'll be talking about it in the E-Cider News. I'm not going to talk about it much here on Cider Chat, maybe in another sidebar of a podcast. I might do that down the line. I don't want to go too far from the apple of the issue here, which is all about cider making. But I will be discussing this on E-Cider News. And if you're one of those lucky folks who had a ticket to the events of last weekend and you were able to get a link to meet your own POAP, you might want to take a look at that. There's like a timeline to be able to do that. And that's going to it's going to end in January, on January 18th. So between now and then, I'll be talking about it a bit on E-Cider News. So subscribe to that at ciderchat.com. Alrighty, that's about all I can handle. Seriously. I had one day last week out of there's a lot of cleanup after you like doing a big event and making sure all the different cider makers who brought kegs over to the tap takeover, that they all got returned, and the jockey box was able to get returned to Artifact Cider Project, who was just absolutely amazing for lending that to us. and making sure it's cleaned out and all the ice. Just so much that goes on. You just can't imagine. I learned a lot. I learned a lot this year, and looking forward to just getting it better and better, because it really worked pretty damn seamlessly. It's just that I did a lot of the work, and I'm getting a sense now of what steps to take to make it a little bit easier for next time. Anywho, moving on, I want to go to this main conversation with both Steve and Ann talking about Ragged Hill Ciders. This was a sit down, just going through so many wonderful ciders, because they really have been able to, during COVID, you know, sit on some of these ciders and let them super duper hone in and condition. So let's go through. I'm just going to tell you briefly the ciders that we're drinking. We had a Baldwin, which was a Pet Nat, a Wixen, a single variety, right? A Roxbury Russet and a Dabinet, and Flora, which is a Roxbury Russet, Cortland, and McIntosh, which was a blend of fruit from 2018 to 2020. And then we also had a little Pommeau that they made too. So we're going to just go to this conversation. This is a great episode to enjoy with a glass of cider and just get in the groove and hear how three people who know a little bit about cider get to talk about it and share that conversation with you. So grab a glass and join this chat with Steve Garwood and Ann Garwood Hamp of Ragged Hill Cider in West Brookfield, Massachusetts.
The interesting thing about the Flora, this one we're calling Flora, that's a blend of fruit, is that we've made it as part of the ice cider process. So after we took off the first fraction of really concentrated mm-hmm. juice for mm-hmm. ice cider, mm-hmm. then that next fraction was 24 to 22 Brix, more like the Brix for a grape wine. Mm-hmm. And we fermented that. So it's a higher ABV. It's 11.7%. It's full of flavor. Wow. And it is lightly pétillant. Anyway, so they're all just yeah. different and interesting from what we've been doing up to this point.
Yeah. I could see. Yeah, this yeah. is really exciting. So I just a visual here. So these are in green bottles. They are all kind of slightly, you know, dewed on it because they are chilled, and there's not really any labels. It's just your like painter's kind of blue tape across with writing on it. It just looks so freaking cool. I'm feeling like the buzz right now. Like I'm just like a kid, like being brought by my uncle to the candy store, you know, when I was 10, like, oh my God, I mean, pinch me. Am I right here? This is so cool.
Well, we're so excited for you to try them.
Yeah, yeah. And Baldwin is just like ABV, just overall ABV. Mm-hmm. We have 11% for the Flora, and mm-hmm. then the Baldwin and all the other, are they out?
Baldwin's at 7. Okay. The Wixen is 9. That's a really high sugar apple.
Yeah.
And this Russet Debonet is a still cider, and that's at 8.8. So those, mm-hmm. you know, those are okay. higher sugar apples as mm-hmm. well. So, you know, with our dessert fruit, we get sort of between 5 and 6%, usually under 7%, right. but these are different than that.
And how about the Pommeau?
And the Pommeau is 18.7.
18. Okay. Yep. That's yep. a kick-ass Pommeau. yeah, but I bet it's smooth as a baby's behind.
Want to try some?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. Nice small bubbles.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Yeah. You know, it's a mild flavor. It's yeah. like a, I think of it like a Prosecco or something like that. It's yeah. not supposed to have a lot of overwhelming character to it. It's just like
tannin in the back, just mm-hmm. enough tannin so it's not overwhelming, but it has complexity to it. Super smooth, perfect with food, right?
Yeah.
Baldwin,
yeah.
perfect with food.
Yeah.
Baldwin just makes me, it's a happy apple. I don't know, you know, like it's a beautiful apple to behold on the tree.
Yeah.
It has a lot of history. We lost all our Baldwins here. 1939, was it, the hurricane?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
That blew over all the Baldwin yeah. trees here.
And it's a Massachusetts variety. It was developed in Winchester, as I remember. Yeah. In the 19th century. You know, that's something that we're looking for, is proven varieties that we know grow well in this climate, mm-hmm. that are good producing, you know. Mm. I mean, there are practical aspects and flavor aspects, you know. So as growers, we're looking for good, robust trees that aren't highly susceptible to disease and we know do well in this climate.
So this is nice. You know what I like? You get a... I've had other ciders, I'm going to say more in the modern style being made, where you'll have this kind of finish, this clear, this crisp, it's like some tart, and then the sugar kind of like hits in the back and you're like, oh, dang. But here, it's like all the way through, you're just happy with the completion of the cider. You're not getting any cloyingly sweetness. It's just enough, the sweetness that you're going to get on the apple. Really perfecting. You're making like, I haven't even tasted the other ciders, but I know that your ciders are really good because I don't know what you're doing, but you're taking the time. Your consciousness is there, and that's, yeah, I really respect time. That. Big respect.
Time is the missing ingredient in a lot of them. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm not trying to just crank out a lot of product. Also, just really thinking about ciders that could sit on a table as a fine wine. I mean, that's really, you know, that pair really well with food, that really express the fruit, especially express the fruit as it's grown in our mm-hmm. climate. Really trying to hone in on a New England style, mm-hmm. which we're finding more and more is this sort of just clean, crisp, a little minerality, a little mm-hmm. flintiness, but fruity still. You know, it really does express the fruit, but it's cold climate.
That
fruit,
tannin, that mm-hmm. tannin though is always there. I think that I get New England ciders more so than some other regions. Not mm-hmm. that they don't have that too, but I think as a standard, I always expect that. And you're getting this on that final draw. It's mm-hmm. right there.
Yep. There's not more than like just a very minimal amount of residual sugar at this point. But it has body that gives you a perception of fullness and sweetness rather than sugariness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the fruit. It's right there, 100% fruit.
And as a pet nat, you know, because there are lees, a little bit of lees in the bottle, I think that this will just improve with time, get more of those nutty, you know, toasted sort of notes to it. Because this is from this last fall, so it hasn't been in the bottle more than, you know, 7-8 months.
It was put in the bottle to secondary fermentation in April, so it's really only 5 months old, 4 or 5 months old. So it'll improve. It'll be better, you know, a year from now. That's a business reason for us to make ciders that will improve with time. We don't have to worry about, we don't have to crank these out, we don't have to sell them right away. They're going to improve in time. With the ones that we have left, if we like it, we may disgorge them. You know, mm-hmm. let's say disgorge it, and maybe do a little dosage, even if the dosage might be just some of our apple spirit to bring the alcohol up a little bit, mm-hmm. and then cork it, and we'll have a real champagne style. That's old enough, you know.
It's not just
a couple of months old. It'll be a year, 18 months old. And it'll be nothing but more valuable and more flavorful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. I can see that. And yet it's perfect just where it is right now. I mean, dang, you know. I'm going to just kind of pause here. So what Stephen's talking about, the dosage is like doing that traditional champagne method where you would uncork it, kind of get the yeast excited again, perhaps, and then put it under like a corking cage in that case. But right now these are all on crown caps and it's pet nat, so it's been naturally carbonating in the bottle. And that's why we have these like really delicate
bubbles.
The bubbles are perfect.
You can just tell by the bubbles that it's a natural fermentation and not carbonated.
And in your mouth
that
too.
Soft quality instead of sort of sharpness of mm-hmm. bubbles. Yeah.
Really, really soft and perfect with the cheese.
Really great with this cheese.
Oh, my God. I just opened it with the cheese, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yep.
Very cool.
So that really tastes like Baldwin. I mean, that's the Baldwin apple. That's what that tastes like. And mm-hmm. we're trying to not cover up the apple with introducing more sweetness to it. Or, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, that's the thing.
You know, here's the interesting thing. So you have a lot of single varietals, a couple blend. You know, this is what we're seeing now in cider making mm-hmm. is that movement towards single varietal ciders. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in the day, it'd be like, you can't. And there's some makers who feel like it should only be a blend, but now I'm seeing them change. So isn't that kind of a aha moment for cider now? I think even worldwide. It's not just an American thing. What was that change? Because that's a recent change, really, for single variety.
Right now, I think we're just trying to explore the fruit that grows well here. Mm-hmm. What are the flavors that we can coax out of it in our cider making? And one of the things that I think is super interesting is tasting a single varietal, you know, that's grown in New England, or tasting one that's grown in California, if you can get some, you know, just tasting the differences of where these apples are grown. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, it's cider maker choices and things like that. But I think that that's just super interesting and seeing how different fruit can be grown in different places.
Yeah, the soil.
Environments,
The climate, yeah, definitely.
So this is Wixon. I'm not going to say anything. I want to see.
Okay, all right. I hear you.
I don't want to influence your perception.
That's a wise way to go. So now we have more of a straw color, clean, not as tart as the Baldwin, but fruity and forward, very fruity forward. That same kind of delightful balance of the sugar in the fruit, because I know that you didn't add any sugar in there. Totally different profile and taste.
You know, just comparing the two, you're only tasting the apple.
Yeah.
Like, you're really tasting the apple. It's not like just more of the same.
Yeah.
It's like, this is really different than the Baldwin.
Yeah.
And it's not, we're just into, we want really clean flavors. Like, not funky, not acetic, not.
Mm-hmm.
I want to taste the apple. I want to taste a lot of extraneous things. No Brett. No malolactic.
Mm-hmm.
Just this is the apple.
You want all about the apple, but you're using yeast. So how do you select your yeast then? What are you looking for in the yeast so that it showcases the apple and doesn't lead it too much?
I choose yeast on the basis of like, What suits my methods more than what suits my taste? In the end, I don't see a whole lot of taste influence of the yeast in the end.
I'm going to say your yeast that you're using, but I think yeast can really impact the cider tremendously. So it sounds like you're choosing a more like neutral wine yeast that is not going to dictate too much. And so I think that's good to know, because if it was like a Saison yeast, you know, we would be getting different overtures.
Yeah. Yes, we are trying to use neutral yeast.
Like, when do you start dosing in the yeast in that process?
Right away.
Right away, just from the get-go. Yeah. Are there any sulfites going on to kind of stop that initially? Or
I only use sulfite later. I don't use any sulfite
initially
in the beginning. So if there is, I mean, there may be a little bit of natural fermentation going on by the time we get the yeast in there, you know, which may be another 24 hours or a day later.
Yeah.
We aren't doing anything to kill that. I don't do any in the beginning. Racking and clarifying just enough to protect it.
I do too. I mean, that's the one time that I do use sulfites. So if I'm understanding this correctly, I'm imagining that because you want to have that really clean style and you are using a cultured yeast, that you're using a real vigorous type of yeast that's really strong and could go in there and say, okay, pounce, wild, you're out of here. We're the new yeast in town.
Kind of medium vigor.
Okay, all right.
I don't want it to explode.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
No explosions.
Yeah,
please.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just that it gets going so fast that it's blowing off all of these sort of, you know, more subtle fruity flavors, I think.
Yeah. And I don't know, you may have, when you were visiting us at the cidery, you may have noticed that I keep the cidery very cool. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
But so I use a yeast that'll that'll do well in those cool conditions, mm-hmm. and that it intentionally won't be like too strong. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can pick a yeast that's just, you just want to get it fermented as fast as possible. Sure. You know, it's like.
Do you guard your yeast like trade secret at all?
No.
Do you mind sharing?
So generally use DV10, which is a champagne, you know, mm-hmm. champagne yeast. It's kind of a workhorse mm-hmm. Yeast.
But it's not like super, like your fruit is such that it's not drying it out. So champagne yeast, a lot of times when people use it, it really goes to like total dry, and you don't have any of the, uh-huh. the characters left in the apple, but you still have the characteristics of the apple, which yeah. is really
I think it's
really
that
awesome.
Slow, cool
yeah.
environment that, yeah. that we do, you know, yeah. that it's not, it ferments slowly, which is a, You have to tread a narrow line. So you've got to get the fermentation going, and you don't want the juice to sit there without fermenting, because then, I mean, you run a chance of getting other stuff mm-hmm. that you don't want mm-hmm. in there.
Yeah.
And so you want it to be just right. You know, I don't know how else to explain it.
Well, I get what you mean. Like, it's part of a sense, you know when it's just going to be just right. And you're right, you do keep your cidery cool temp, so that makes, that doesn't allow, like, organisms to kind of grow in the same way.
Yeah, and that's just because we don't have, we didn't have enough money to buy a lot of jacketed fermenters, you know, so that we can control each one. So we just keep the whole cidery cool.
Maybe not a bad idea, though, because your equipment is cool then. And, and so anything that's kind of touching where there could be any type of, you know, little microbes wanting to hang on, they're going to be like, no, I'm out of here.
Yeah, it's easy. We found it's easier to keep clean. Things don't get moldy, right. You know. And
sure.
But yeah, so this is Wixen, and this is, you can really taste the Wixen apple.
Mm-hmm.
So Wixen is an American variety. It's not an antique. It's developed in the early 20th century in mm-hmm. California, as you may know. But it's a very nice tree. It's a good producer, but not really commercially viable, you know, because they're like this
little
big,
crab apple size,
tiny little. Yeah.
No one would buy it in a grocery store. It's like, what is this? And the taste is intense.
Yeah,
it doesn't taste like what most people think of an apple should taste like.
Right,
it's acidic and tannic, mm-hmm. but it's mm-hmm. a beautiful, beautiful cider apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got high sugars. I mean, the apples were like 21 to 23 bricks, like mm-hmm. a month of them.
Yep.
And we picked them ourselves, so we really let them sit on the tree just as long as we possibly could. I remember we picked them in November in the rain.
Yeah. And I literally picked them ourselves.
Every single one.
Mm.
This cider is like a perfect single varietal cider. It doesn't taste like anything else. It has some unique characteristics, you know, fairly high alcohol for not having any mm-hmm. added sugar to it.
Was this 9%?
So it's 9%. Yeah, that's one. Yeah.
Really expresses the apple. You won't mistake this. Mm-hmm. You won't mistake this for a Baldwin.
No, you're not. Yeah. No, and not so high that you can have a second glass. Because right. if it was a wine and you're looking at the 11% or higher, mm-hmm. then you know that's a that's a little different story, but. Yeah, really, really nice.
It's even better as it warms up a little mm-hmm, bit, I mm-hmm. think.
Really good with the cheese.
Mm-hmm.
This cheese that you put out, it's really nice with that.
That's just a cheddar.
It's really good.
A little Vermont cheddar.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that cheddar really mm-hmm. melds it. Oh, man. Just brings both of the cider and the cheese to a different height. I freaking love that. I'm so excited to, like, have your cider at the cider dinner. Which is going to be just amazing.
I'm so excited about that. You've got so many just amazing women that have just been leading the way in cider, and I'm so honored to be a part of it this year.
I'm so happy.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling sad about all the other women that I couldn't, you know, I feel like I want to have like a giant
everybody.
Feast table. It's just crazy. But, you know, that's like a good problem to have for us in the cider world is that we have so many choices of different makers, and not to leave any one gender out, of course, although I do feel it's the year of the Pomona to really stand forward. I mean, if I was going to talk about the Wixen, I would say, first of all, get out some cheese. This is like a perfect like little cheese pairing. Mm-hmm. That's a nice way to kind of introduce it to people. And just to introduce that kind of food pairing, I think folks do need that direction in a way. Mm-hmm. We like cider needs to be drunk with food. It just, I mean, there's very few ciders that you don't like with food, right? Mm-hmm. And then alone, you know, it's just like your belly's like saying, oh, like, bring me to a new high.
Yeah. That's why the cider dinner is going to be so exciting.
Yeah.
And really be able to sit and taste through people's cider with some, you know, intentionally paired foods. And
yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
So the next up is a still cider.
Okay.
Now, these two, the two we've had before, are fairly, you know, fairly young ciders. This includes cider from as far back as 2018. And it's Roxbury Russet and Dabinet, some Golden Russet in there also. But it's a blend of those two. I think Dabinet's always going to be just a small addition to our ciders. This is going to be totally different.
Yeah, the Dabinet is kind of like, hey, hello, I'm here. You could see that with the Roxbury Russet, you know, it's definitely pronounced enough where it's, I'm noticing it right in the bouquet right there.
Dabinets are very tannic, very, very tannic. You can hardly eat them.
Mm. Oh, okay, so now I'm like walking in the Quabbin. I come upon a little apple tree. I'm like, oh, apple tree, you are lost and lonely. Let me take a little bite into your apple. And I crunch in and I'm smelling the Quabbin and that like wide, vast wilderness area. And this is what you have in the glass. Rustic, you know, I'm right here, you know. Move over, Roxbury. No, you move over. I'm right here. Oh, yeah, let's sit together. This is really, really cool.
I think you hit the nail on the head with, like, taking a walk in the Quabbin in the fall. Like, I smell, like, fall leaves, like, woodsiness, like, wood smoke a little bit. Like, there's just all these sort of just fall and New England flavors, I feel
Definitely. Yeah, if you're crunching on the leaves, But it's not, it doesn't have any kind of funk in the taste, so there's no mustiness in the finish at all. It's just that Dabinet is really coming through, the tannin.
And like dried fruit, you know, like that concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not really any residual sugar, but it has a body and a mouth feel that gives you the sensation of sweetness. It's not really, not sweet, but
the sensation,
yeah.
It's the sugars of the apple.
But yeah, the funkiness and mustiness, I mean, this is, again, you know, as cider makers and winemakers, in the end, all you have is your own taste. I mean, that's your main tool, you know, it's like, it's your own taste. So for me, for my taste, I don't want that funkiness, mustiness, Brett. I want clear, clean, distinctive flavors.
And that's why I really appreciate you, because I know I could, that consistency, I think, means a lot for a brand. That's where you're at. And that's my expectation when I'm taking your cider, that's exactly what I'm going to find. It's reliable.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I took this cider and I brought it all the way to Europe with me, I know delivering it to Europe, I'd be like, okay, hello. I know exactly. I don't need to like, oh, maybe I should try that cider beforehand.
Mm-hmm. I think that's part of, that has been part of our goal too, is to provide, you know, like you're saying, people know that with our ciders, they're going to get a real nice, clean cider that expresses the fruit that we grow.
Yeah.
It's the Dabinet. You can taste the English influence. You who have tasted ciders all over the world. This is an English influenced cider.
I get it. Yeah, it's almost like a little bit of a vanilla note at the end. But it's not, there's no oak or anything in this. Right?
None.
But you're getting that right at the end.
Yeah, the woodiness is not, it's not from oak, it's not from barrel or anything.
No, it's just a Dabinet.
Yep.
This just gets better and better. And the glass,
as it's warming up.
It wants,
This one for sure.
This should be like room more more closer to room temperature. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's better if it's so.
And this is still too. We want
this is still.
To know. This is not still. There's no
no bubbles. Yeah. I mean, it really it walks that line between almost a red wine. You know, the kind of bigger flavors that are in it. You know, that sort of white wine and red wine.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying there.
Well, you have tasted more ciders than anybody I know, Rhea. I appreciate your appreciation. You're also tasting the maturity of this cider. That's been, like I said, it's some this is a blend from ciders that are as far back as 2018, because we didn't have big harvests of this fruit, so it's taken us that long to collect a good batch of these varietals. It shows that the ciders improve with maturity.
You know what I also like about your ciders, and we've just tasted three, is that often you'll find like a house yeast that is dominant, but I don't get that in your ciders.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not getting that, at least not at this point. I mean, the only thing I'm getting that's characteristic is that they're all of that same, I'm going to say maturity. They're all really defined in their own way. They're not, you know, overly sweet. It's just 100% fruit in the glass, and I'm not being led by the yeast. So I think you really hit it straight on by not having the yeast dominate and let the fruit go forward. Because I'm looking for that, like, house house profile. I'm not getting it.
Yeah, well, that's good.
I appreciate
that, but that's good. That's all those things.
That's what we're trying
to do.
Not that it's a bad thing, because some people want to have a certain house yeast, and that's kind of cool. It's like, oh, that's coming from, you know, I can pick that out. But these are all really, really distinct, and I'm not being led by the yeast.
These Pet Mat ciders that will, you know, we'll probably be selling them over a few years. I expect the yeast autolysation to have influence in the flavors, which is it's a totally different thing. It's not a yeasty, you know, flavor.
Right. The russet and the dabinet is really something that I would like to have, like, keep in the glass for a bit. And just, you know, over, like, a lot of times I think, okay, I want to have food, but this is a cider that can stand on its own without any food. And it would be lovely to just have, like, in a little cocktail party or something, and you're just serving that, and you could walk around. And as it sits in your glass, as you're, like, chit-chatting, it's going to change. And it's almost like a meal unto itself. That's the complexity. And I just love how the two apples have married each other and are just lifting each other out of the glass.
Nice.
That's gonna sit there for a while, you know, and still be just as interesting from the first sip to the last. Now, what I notice, like, as it sits, the more I'm like, holy crapola, this is, like, amazing. This is, like, dropping me in. Like, you know, originally, you're kind of like, okay, you know, we're adjusting from the Wixen, you know, the Baldwin to the Wixen. And, but here, it was like, okay, I need to get my mouth acclimated. You know, so I've been trying to do a different thing now when I'm tasting cider, because I notice, like, if I smell too quickly, sometimes I start sneezing or it makes me cough. It's like, oh, you know, that's not good. Like, let it settle in the glass. Let the aroma settle in the glass. And now I've just been like, I'm going to sip it and let it go. So instead of, like, worrying about the bouquet straight off, and then I go to the bouquet.
That's interesting.
That
body?
Deep body deep, kind of darker, rounder flavors that come out as it warms up.
That's what people love, Dabinette.
Yeah.
You know, they're willing to, like, deal with the tree, which is
so difficult.
And it's like, oh, the face. Yeah, it's like, oh, so difficult. But, yeah, it's, I don't think if you talk to folks in other parts of the world, they would say that. But here in the U.S., you hear that loud and clear.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a weak tree. And, you know, fire blight susceptible, that they don't worry about fire blight in Europe. So it is difficult to grow here, but even a little bit of it adds.
It goes a long way.
So this is the only European variety that we use. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you're going to pick one, why not? Right.
Yep.
Because it does just wow. And nice pairing it with the Roxbury Russet.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool, I think. Because now you've kind of done, we call this like a fusion between America and Europe. Or America in terms of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because I kind of see the Roxbury Russet as, again, a Massachusetts apple.
Right. Of course, Roxbury Russet is our first North American apple, and it grows beautifully here. It's a beautiful tree.
It really does.
And it's unique flavors, and you can taste it in the juice before you even ferment it. The juice has these unique qualities to it.
Hot dang.
Yeah.
Three really, really different ciders.
Yep.
How exciting.
And that was one of the things that we really were happy about, too, that they are, each one of them, even though this is sort of all the same season, they're all so different. You know, there's not one like, oh, well, that kind of tastes like the other one. You know, they're all very, very different from each other.
Yeah, this one is older, but we've been holding it back all those years. Yeah.
So how old is that?
Well,
it's a blend of a few years.
Yeah, it's 2018 through 2020.
It's 3 years.
Yeah, 3 years.
Wow, you do sit on it a bit. That's alone is commendable.
Yep.
But maybe the pandemic helped a little bit.
We knew we wanted it just right before we released.
That's the right thing to say. And you got it just right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's only going to get righter too.
But that's our focus. Even in this transition period that we're having now, where we've really, really had to think about, okay, what are we doing here? What's important to us? And what's important to us is to take our time and to make the very best ciders that we can. We're not trying to just, grow for growth's sake. Okay, this is our Flora. This is a blend. There's quite a bit of heritage apples in this, but also Baldwin's, Cortland's, Max. And it's an attempt to sort of expand on and utilize ice cider process. My idea was I wanted to make a cider that started with juice that was at wine bricks, like 22, 24 bricks. So this is 11.7% ABV.
A little bit more viscosity in the swirl here. People have kind of likened that to legs. So you're seeing a little bit more richness in the liquid itself in the glass. Yep. Nice golden hue to the cider itself. Just beautiful.
The nose is very fragrant and has that volatility, the alcoholic volatility to it.
Yummy. Delicious. It's totally different than all the other ciders we just had. So we're going from the Roxbury Russet and Davinet to Flora. And so we went from like very astringent to just a full-bodied, not tannic cider. It's totally crisp.
I feel like this is like a
holy moly,
a full-bodied, crisp white wine. You know, like it just has all those, but it still has a lot of complexity to it.
Lot of depth to it. Lot of depth.
Yeah, it's like a white wine with a lot of flavor, like a Vignier or something like that. It's not trying to be shy. It's not trying to be retiring. It's just upfront. Flavor to it.
I mean, this has weight to it. It's like, wow.
And just but lightly pétillant, just a little.
Very light.
It has the perception of more sweetness than it actually has, just because of the silkiness and mouthfeel.
creamy with that, you know, kind of tartness there. But it's very creamy, luxurious to the mind and tongue. You know, you're like, oh, this is a drink to be reckoned with. Each one is like really uniquely defined, which is a beautiful thing to do.
Well, another thing I wanted to be sure to say to you, Rhea, is that I really appreciate what you do and the enormous effort that you put into it, and the whole your relentless positivity that you bring to the whole thing, to everything that you do. And that's a great thing to have in the cider community, is your positive outlook on things. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, the enthusiasm that you bring to it is really, really
thank
great.
You. Thank you for that.
That was Steve Garwood and Ann Garwood Hemp, the father and daughter team behind Ragged Hill Cider. If you're interested in trying some of these ciders, well, guess what? They have an online shop. Just go to raggedhillcider.com. Well, I think that's a wrap.
Not yet, Rhea.
What do you mean, Mr. Quince?
The poem.
Oh, yes, the poem. We have a little poem by Robert Frost. Shall I read it?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Perry, can you pass me the paper?
Indeed, Rhea, but it's a poem about apples and not pears.
Oh, yeah, I see that. Well, it's still a great poem. I mean, who doesn't love Robert Frost?
Indeed, he is a local, and there is a Robert Frost trail, but he neglects to write a poem about pears.
Duly noted, Perry Pear. Hey, you know, your palms have been kind of quiet this whole episode.
We're a little bit tired, Rhea.
I know. We're all kind of recovering from the big weekend of so many amazing events. And you had a lot of fans at Cider Days 2.0, didn't you? I remember I really got a lot of love for Perry, in fact, from both Cassandra and Noel. Do you remember that, Perry Bear?
Yes, I did. That was quite nice to hear. But of course, I am Perry Bear.
And also, Vermont Quince was there on November 5th at the Cider Pop-Up. That was amazing.
Quite nice. But Rhea, the poem.
Right, Mr. Quince. I know. I'm sorry. I digress. We're still a little loopy. We've only had like a week of recovery, and it just, you know, takes us a little bit. And, you know, we've been working hard trying to get the orchard ready to tuck away for the winter.
Rhea.
Okay, Mr. Quince. All right, I'm on it. Can somebody hand me that? Because, Perry, you haven't given it to me yet.
Here it is.
Thank you, Medlars. Okay. All right. This is a beautiful little excerpt from After Apple Picking by Robert Frost, which we all thought was quite poetic, considering the time of year here, at least in New England, around apples, and probably in your special spot of Ciderville, too.
I love it.
So do I, Medlars. All right, and it reads, magnified apples appear and disappear, stem end and blossom end, and every fleck of russet showing dear. My instep arch not only keeps the ache, it keeps the pressure of a ladder round. I feel the ladder sway as the boughs bend, and I keep hearing from the cellar bin the rumbling sound of load on load of apples coming in.
Bravo!
Thank you. It's a beautiful poem, and it's so timely for this kind of time of the year where so many folks are still bringing in apples and you're pulling them in, and that rumbling sound. It's just music to our ears, isn't it?
Indeed, indeed. Although I do think that the pears sound a little bit different. They have a little bit more ruggedness to them.
Perry.
Right.
Okay, Palms, that's about it. Obviously, you have spoken up during this episode, and so I definitely want everyone who has no idea who you are, these are my friends, the Talking Palms, and it's with them that I'm able to keep this Cider House happening and this podcast rolling out to you. But at this point, I think we'll leave this here and say adieu for now. Does that sound good?
Take it away, Rhea.
With that, we leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller and the Talking Palms.
Hello.
Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Strange apples, bitter sharp. Strange apples, juicy and ripe. Bop, 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 ba-dop, doo-doo-dop, bop, bop. Bop, who wants a tannin balm?
I want a tannin balm.
Who wants to pull them down?
I'm gonna pull them down. Hey, 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 apples, bittersweet.
Strange apples,
hanging high.
Got them strange apples.
Forget the pie.
Strange apples,
squeeze them tight.
Got them
strange apples. Strange apples. Strange apples. Make them pop.
I want a tannin balm.
Who wants to pull them down?
I'm gonna pull them down. Hey, 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 apples.
Come and see. Plenty strange apples for you and me. Strange apples. Strange apples. Apples, make them pop.
Pop, pop, pop.
Ba-da, doo-doo-da. Pop, pop, pop. Ba-da, doo-doo-da. Pop, pop, pop. Ba-da, doo-doo-da. Pop, pop, pop. Pop, 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 pop.
Yee-haw!